We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events, the list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
All right, let's get into part two of today's show, and we're going to talk about the Notre Dame defensive line, and this is going to be a very interesting conversation because this part of the team, to me, is probably the biggest. I love what it is now, but I'm not sure what it's going to be that Notre Dame has. And here's what I mean by this, and we're going to get into this because the whole point of this conversation is to kind of look at it and say, hey, where is Notre Dame as a program right now for 2024, but then also trying to look at it for the future. And when I look at Notre Dame's 2024 defensive line, I think it's got a chance to be really good. And I'm going to explain why. After I break that down, I'm going to explain why I have some concerns for the future. And I know I'm not the only one. And so we'll dive into that too. So because maintaining is the key, right? When Notre Dame lost Harry Hiestand the first time, the offensive line went down and the team wasn't as good. Harry Hiestand comes back, things start trending back up. Now Joe Rudolph has to build on that, right? You've got to maintain where your strengths are. Right now, the Notre Dame defensive line, it was a strength for Notre Dame in 2023. And I know it wasn't a strength everywhere. There was issues at Viper, but when you look at the production and the play from the defensive line, and especially what they did in some of the bigger games, the defensive line, to me, played like a top defensive line last year. Go watch Ohio State game, and they were excellent. You know, go look at the Duke game. The team didn't play well. D-line played pretty flipping good in that game. Louisville was a little up and down. Clemson was a little up and down. USC, dominant. I mean, NC State, dominant. I mean, there was a lot of great moments from the D-line last year. Now, not every position, but as a whole, it was very, very good. And so a lot of that's coming back next year. You've got some new faces. So I think this defensive line has a chance to be one of the best. And I'm going to break down why. I'm going to explain to you kind of why I think this defensive line in 2024 has a chance to be a top 3 to 4 defensive line. And then what I like about it and then what we need to see.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America, We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it. 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all three. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So I'm going to pull up sort of the post-spring depth chart of the defensive line, and we're going to talk about this a little bit. We're going to start with the defensive end position. Actually, we're going to start with the defensive tackle position. Let's start with the strength. Let's go defensive tackle. So when I look at the defensive tackle position group, I think it's absolutely loaded. And I've seen some conversations about the depth and things like that. And there's some truth to that. But allow me to kind of explain what has me so fired up. Now, this is just scholarship players in the D-line, D-tackle spot. I have not added any of the guys that will be arriving in the summer. This is just where it is post-spring. So you won't see Quentin Avery on here, who's a walk-on. He won't be part of this conversation. Same thing for the defensive end position. Actually, defensive end-wise, all the high school kids are enrolled already. So you'll actually see a complete group from this one. But let's look at the defensive tackles. Number one, this is a position group that's been a problem for Notre Dame for years. And even a year where they had an All-American like Jerry Tillery, he was up and down, and the play outside of him was not overly impactful. Part of the reason Notre Dame's defensive line last year was so good was because your starting defensive tackles were top five in the country last year amongst all defensive tackle groups. And I think sometimes as Notre Dame fans, we tend to lose sight of how good – let me think of a better way to put this. I don't think we always appreciate how good what Notre Dame has is because we don't watch enough of other teams, or we'll only watch a team once or twice. They play well, and we just assume that's always the case. And what I think gets missed with last year's Notre Dame defensive line is the fact that if you look at any metric, there's no doubt that Notre Dame's defensive line was part of what was a top-ranked defense. Notre Dame was a clear top 10 defense last year. That's not really debatable. It was a group that finished in the top 10 in scoring defense, top 10 in total defense, top 10 in yards per play, top 10 in red zone defense. There's a lot of categories. This defense was top 5 to 10. They were excellent. And a big part of that was the play of their defensive line. And so when a big part of the play of the defensive line was how good the defensive tackles were. That was a big key. Now, I know that some people are more down on this group than I think they are. And that's because I think Riley Mills has become a little bit of a whipping boy for Notre Dame fans for some reason. And I don't quite understand that, but that's just the reality of it. He doesn't get enough credit for how good he was. Now, can Riley Mills get better? Absolutely. Does Riley Mills need to get better? Absolutely. But he did a lot of really good things last year. You pair him with Howard Cross, who had an exceptional year last year. And the numbers back it up, and the film backs it up. Howard Cross last year, second team All-American. You look at the way he played, he was impactful in the run game. He was impactful in the pass game. His All-American honors were deserved. You know, sometimes guys can become, like, I felt this about Jerry Tillery. And I don't mean disrespect for Jerry Tillery. I think Jerry Tillery did some very good things at Notre Dame. But the reality is that, you know, he was a guy that had some really flashy moments that wasn't consistent. He wasn't a consistently dominant football player. And they need him to be a more consistently dominant football player. That was just the reality of it. And they didn't get it. But then the sidekick to him were nice quality depth players, but they weren't impact players. Last year, Howard Cross not only had some big flashy moments, but he was just consistently a really quality football player that also produced. But he had a partner in crime, so to speak, in Riley Mills. And again, the numbers back it up. If you want to look at pro football, number one, reputation-wise, you talk to any coaches that played Notre Dame, they'll tell you more. Those interior guys were really, really good. But then also you look at some of the greats. So I'm, you know, very hard on Pro Football Focus, but you can't ignore the fact that last year their number 3 and number 11 defensive tackles in the last year were Notre Dame guys. Howard Cross finished 3rd and Riley Mills finished 11th. Now this is minimum 100 snaps. I mean, so I didn't put the minimum snaps up very high, cuz if you play like one game and you grade out really high, then you know, they'll put you in there. So I'm trying to get guys that actually played and give you that statistic, because that's going to help you out. Because if you look at Notre Dame last year, I mean, I could tell you Boubacar Traore had a high grade and he played 5 games, only played 27 snaps all year. That would kind of skew things a little bit, in my opinion. But when you look at it and you look at the production they had, number 3 graded defensive tackle in Howard Cross, number 11 graded defensive tackle in Riley Mills when it comes to pass rush grade. Then you look at the numbers and you look at the total number of pressures. Last year, amongst interior defensive linemen, Howard Cross finished 5th in pressures. Riley Mills finished 7th in pressures. That's all of last year. Now, here's the thing. Look at the list. Here's the top 10. Deion Walker, Brandon Dorlus, Byron Murphy, Jerzon Newton, Howard Cross, Aeneas Peebles, Bear Alexander, Riley Mills, Devondre Sweat, Norrell Pollard. That's the top 10. Well, Murphy's gone. Newton's gone. Sweat's gone. So this is just top 10 last year, not just what's coming back. You look at right outside the top 10, you had Mason Graham and Michael Hall tied for 11. So Michigan's best defensive tackle last year, Mason Graham, had 29 pressures. Notre Dame's number 2 defensive tackle last year had 32. Now, here's if I'm all about being honest and fair. And the difference is for Michigan, is Michigan had 3 guys that had a lot of pressures, right? So we have to be fair about that and say they had 3 guys. And so Notre Dame didn't split up the reps they did. So you had Mason Graham had 29 pressures. Kenneth Grant had 23 pressures. That's a total of 52. Riley Mills or Howard Cross had 39. And then they had Chris Jenkins, who had 20 pressures. So their 3 defensive tackles had 72 pressures. Notre Dame's top 2 guys, Howard Cross and Riley Mills, had, do the math, 39 plus 32, 71 pressures. Their top 2 guys in 13 games had 71 pressures. Michigan's top 3 guys had 72 combined, right? That's, everybody says Michigan, hands down, best defensive tackle in the tandem in the country coming back next year. They may very well be. I don't really care if you say they're better than Notre Dame or Notre Dame's better than them. They're both outstanding. They're both outstanding, and that's what matters. That's run game production or pass game production. Let's look at run game production. So let's look at what Notre Dame had last year when it comes to run game production. And if you look at the overall grades for in production that they had last year in this regard, and you look at the total number of run stops, and you look at the top, the guys coming back last year, the total number, this is all actually not even coming back. This is Power Five, excuse me, all Power Five teams last year. Howard Cross finished number two in the country last year in tackles and run stops, according to Pro Football Focus. It's considered anything that's a win for the defense. Number 10, Riley Mills. Michigan had one guy in the top 10 last year. Now, they had Chris Jenkins was top 10, and Mason Graham was number 14, and I believe Kenneth Grant was in that conversation as well. He was in there somewhere as well. But he was 41st. No, Rayshon Benny was 41st. So, again, the numbers are there. This isn't just my opinion. This is numbers. The numbers that they were in run game and pass game, Riley Mills and Howard Cross were a dynamic 1-2 punch. Let's give some more context. And this is sort of a counter against. I said this before. Notre Dame's defensive tackles last year played a lot of snaps. So when you talk about the production between Notre Dame's guys, Riley Mills and Howard Cross, and then you look at the production for Michigan guys, you have to also keep in mind that that comes with each player individually played a lot less snaps. And so when you look at Notre Dame's defense last year and you compare the number of snaps for Riley Mills and Howard Cross in two less games, they both played way more snaps than Michigan's guys. Howard Cross played 610 snaps and Riley Mills played 535 snaps. That's a lot of snaps for defensive tackles. Why? Because Notre Dame's depth wasn't as good as what Michigan's was last year. When you look at Michigan's defensive interior, they had three guys that could rotate in part of that group, and really four, because as I mentioned before, Rayshon Benny was a pretty good player last year. Did he get hurt? No, he didn't get hurt. But he was a guy last year. So they had Mason Graham played 442 snaps. Kenneth Grant played 403 snaps. Chris Jenkins played 418 snaps. Cam Good played 267 snaps. Rayshon Benny played 244 snaps. After Notre Dame's next top two guys, the next most snaps for a Notre Dame defensive lineman was Jason Onye at 155, and then Gabriel Rubio at 150. Jason Onye was at 155, and Gabriel Rubio was at 136. There was a much greater burden put on Notre Dame's defensive tackles last year. Well, in fairness, that means you're going to have more production. So that has to be taken into consideration. So when I look at it, I would actually like to see a little less production on fewer snaps. But there's a chance you could get same level of production but on fewer snaps, because the reality is the game has changed for Notre Dame in 2024. They can't have the same type of defensive tackle play that they had last year and expect it to be good enough in February when they get to the national championship game, in my opinion, or late January when they get to the national championship game. You did this last year in 13 games. You're now talking about 16 games. You can't have two defensive tackles in college dominate the reps the way that they did last year. So what's going to be key for Notre Dame in 2024, and why I'm excited about this group, is because the depth should be better. Because what's something that's missing from this group right here? You guys are looking, it's a pretty good group. Jason Onye, major breakout this spring. Donovan Heinisch had a really quality spring. Sean Cevolano gives him some beef. He had a nice spring. I liked what I saw from Devin Houston in limited snaps. I liked what I saw from Brendan Vernon in limited snaps. I don't know why the D-line coach doesn't like him as much as I do. He sees a lot more practice, so I don't want to get into that conversation. But what I know is when I saw him in the spring game, he showed me some things. Armo Mukum's very talented. He comes back. What's missing? It's no Gabriel Rubio, because he's not on the team yet. This is post spring. If you add Gabriel Rubio, and I from everything I've heard, I expect him to come back. I haven't heard anything different, but we'll see. And nothing's official till it happens. But if you get Gabriel Rubio back, and with the breakout we saw from Jason Onye, the experience he got last year, Donovan Heinisch, Sean Cevolano, Brendan Vernon, Devin Houston, Armel Mukum, you now have some guys that, in my opinion, you can now rotate more. You don't have to give Howard Cross 50 snaps a game. You don't have to give Riley Mills 45, 50 snaps a game. You can now give those guys some breathers, especially against some of the, let's be honest, lesser opponents. So to me, as good as the defensive tackle starters were last year, the depth was okay, but it wasn't great. They need to be better after the top two guys. And that's where I think is, that's what I think is going to tell the difference between if Notre Dame has a top five defensive tackle group or the best defensive tackle group or the second best defensive tackle group. It's not what Mills and Cross do. They're excellent. If we're just talking two for two, they're in that conversation of the top two or three. There's no debating that, in my opinion. If we're going to talk about who's got the best defensive tackle depth, meaning beyond the first two, Notre Dame doesn't have a case to make there because the production behind the top two, there was a big drop-off where Michigan had four guys that produced last year. Notre Dame had two. That's the difference. So that's why if I was going to tell you who has the better defensive tackle starters, I would make a case for Notre Dame. If you're going to say, well, starters are fine, but what about the entire depth chart? Who has the better defensive tackle group when you go to play your games? Then you have to look at it and say, you can't argue for Notre Dame. You can't, not if you're being objective. You have to go with Michigan's group from last year because they had three or four guys that were doing what Notre Dame's two guys were doing. And so to me, that's why the depth of the defensive tackle position is going to determine how good this group can be. That's why it's important to get Gabriel Rubio back, and hopefully they do. That's why it's important for Jason Onyeka to take what he did this spring and build on it. And it's why it's imperative that Al Washington look at Sevilano and Houston and Vernon, and whether it's he recruited a guy or somebody else recruited a guy, coach all those kids up because there's a lot of young talent there as well. And that's going to determine just how good Notre Dame can be at defensive tackle in 2024.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So let's look at defensive end, and here's the depth chart there. And as you can see, there's a lot of bodies there. The asterisks are walk-on players. And when I look at the defensive end position, it's going to look a lot different than it did last year at defensive end, but there's a chance that it's going to be pretty good. And this is actually a group that I think is going to be better than what we saw last season. RJ Oben, to me, is a player that's, he's a quality player. He comes to Notre Dame with almost 20 career sacks at Duke. There was an adjustment this spring. Didn't see a ton from him in the spring. He did finish the spring off well in the spring game, but he's still learning that position. I need to see a little bit more from him. But I feel a lot better about where he is right now than where Javonte Jean-Baptiste was at this time a year ago, and we know the kind of season he had. I look at Josh Burnham replacing Nano Safa-Mensah. Can Josh be the run stuffer that Nana was? Remains to be seen. Can Josh be more of a playmaker than Nana was? I fully expect him to be that. I don't have any doubt that he's going to be that, in fact, because he's already shown flashes of it, and he's just a different type of athlete than what Nana is. And that's something that, to me, has me excited. I mean, when you look at the type of production Nana had last year, and 112 pass rushes last year, Nana as a fifth-year senior had 8 pressures. Last year, Josh Burnham, in only 87 pass rushes in his first year playing defensive line, had 7 pressures on the quarterback. So I think there's a chance that Josh Burnham becomes a bit of a breakout player for Notre Dame this season. And so when I look at that, I think that's has a chance to be a really dynamic 1-2 punch. And I haven't even gotten yet to Bryce Young, who is still pretty raw. But as we all saw during the Blue Gold game, when he knows what he's doing, there's some freakiness there. And so when I think of RJ Open, veteran, gritty senior, has some nuance, has some of that veteran presence type of thing. And then you look at the type of athletes that they're going to be putting on the field with Josh Burnham and Bryce Young, you start seeing that's why you get fired up, because those two guys are really athletic and really twitchy. And that's why when I view this, when I look at this group, I believe even though you lost your top two ends, and Javonte and Nana were a really good duo last year, I don't want to take anything away from those kids. But this group, to me, goes 3 deep. Last year was 2 deep. And this year just had – it's just more athletic. It's just a more athletic group. It is, especially in the second. I mean, you could say RJ and Javonte might be similar athletically. I know some people think RJ's more athletic. I know a couple people that think Javonte's a little bit more athletic. It's a wash. Let's just say it's a wash. There's no debating that the next two guys are more athletic than what we saw last year. I'm very excited about that group. Don't know what to expect from Gaden Gobira. We'll see how that one pans out. Loved him coming out of high school. He was starting to flash last year in the spring or in fall camp. Got hurt. Need to see him healthy and see what he's doing and before I can really say a whole lot about him. The big question on the defensive line, defensive tackle and Viper. Viper as a whole. Defensive tackle depth, excuse me, and Viper, just from top to bottom. Viper's a question mark. And really, it comes down to me, a couple guys. Like I know folks around Notre Dame that just absolutely love Junior Chiarumaka. And I hope they're right about him. I loved him coming out of high school. I don't love him. I didn't love him moving to defensive end or Viper. I just haven't seen it. I mean, I just haven't seen a guy that he's never really done it in a game. He's never been a guy that's produced play here, play there, but just there's no consistency there. I mean, last year he only produced 4 hurries the entire season. Just 4. That's it. 4 the entire season. Only produced 2 run stops the entire season. Josh Burnham last season. So Junior Tuilamaka and Josh Burnham played almost identical snaps. Junior had 82 run snaps. Josh had 86. This is according to Pro Football Focus. Junior had 80 pass rush snaps. Josh had 87. So 80 pass rush snaps for Junior. He had 4 pressures the whole year. Josh had 7. So almost twice as many despite only playing 7 more snaps. But here's where it got bad. Junior played 82 run snaps. Josh played 486. According to Pro Football Focus, Junior Tuilamaka only had 2 run stops the entire year. 2. Josh Burnham had 11 and only 86 run snaps. And here's what got it is even worse. Jordan Patelho played total run snaps. Jordan Patelho last year played 181 total run snaps last year. That's 95 more than Burnham. He only had 3 more run stops than Burnham. I bring that up because Burnham's not there anymore. So you have, coming back to the Viper position, you have 22, where is Boubacar? Let me find Boubacar here real quick. So Boubacar had 1 pressure last year. So you have 5. You have 23 total pressures coming back to your Viper depth chart last year, next year. 25. That's it. You only have 17 total run stops coming back to your Viper depth chart this year. If you look at just Isaiah Foskey in 2022, he had 33 pressures and 26 run stops. That's not – Jordan Patelho alone had 18 pressures in 2022, just by himself. So when you look at that lack of production at that position, I mean, heck, Justin Adamiola by himself in 2022, Justin Adamiola had 24 total pressures. compared to 23. Didn't I say, what did I say? 23 from this current group. So Betelho had 18. Tuilamaca had 4. Bubkrad 1. That's 23. And then Justin Adamiola by himself had 20 run stops that season. This group coming back has 17. So Justin Adamiola by himself outproduced the entire returning Viper depth chart from last season of guys that are still at Viper. Now, obviously, you throw Josh Burnham's numbers in there and they don't do it. That's three guys that you're talking about. That's a problem. And I've heard people say, well, they don't use the Viper to rush the passer all the time. That's nonsense. They still use the Viper to rush the passer just as much as they did before on a per-snap basis. Matter of fact, if you look at the numbers, the coverage drops, percentage of coverage snaps from the Vipers last year was less per snap than what it was in 2022. Isaiah Foskey and Betelho and Adamiola dropped into coverage more in 2022 at a much higher rate than what we saw last year. This is not about changing scheme, not asking the Vipers to do a whole lot. This isn't about spending it. It wasn't good enough. The Viper position was not good enough. But, and this is my favorite but that I'm going to discuss here this offseason, I think. But I'm actually kind of a little bit encouraged about this group because Betelho is what he is. He's going to be a flashy player. I fully expect Jordan Betelho to be better in 2023 because let's be honest, guys. There are selfish reasons, and this is not an insult. This is not me taking a shot at Jordan Betelho. This is just being realistic. There are selfish reasons for Jordan Betelho to be as focused as he's ever been in his career. Because why? This is his last year of college football. If he wants to go play in the National Football League, he needs to step up this year. So I certainly expect him to be better. The only question is how much better. Are we going to get the Syracuse 22, South Carolina 22, version of Jordan Betelho, or are we going to get the guy that just disappears for long stretches of times and then is flashy? Can we see consistency from him? That's what we don't know about Jordan Betelho. That's what he's got to prove. But I think he's going to be better. And then there's Junior Tuilamaca. I mean, I think he'll be better. I don't know if he can be worse. I think he's going to be better with just experience. But the wild card here to me is Boubacar Traore. That's going to be the key that, to me, is going to determine just how good this group can be. We all saw it in the blue-gold game, and we saw the same thing the week before in the jersey scrimmage. When Boubacar knows is locked in, he's got explosiveness that nobody else on the roster has. He's got a first step that nobody on the roster has, in my opinion, at least not a Viper. He can add something to the table. Now, he's still raw. He's got one move. It's a speed-to-power edge rush. That's it. He's got to develop counter moves. He's got to be able to sometimes maybe show a little bit of a slower start and then rip by you, move inside. He's got to be able to use his hands better. He still has a lot to learn, but he has the potential to really take that next step. If Al Washington can do a good job developing him this offseason, Boubacar could go a long way towards making this a much improved group. If the Viper group can give you more production, if they can just give you a 50% jump on what they did last year, just 50%. That's not even that big of an increase. That's how bad their numbers were last year. If they can just give you a 50% increase as a group, that to me makes this a top three defensive line. I really believe that. Let's just be generous. Top five defensive line. If the Viper position can give you that. I think as it stands right now, Notre Dame's got a top 7 to 10 level defensive line. Because of the lack of pass rushing production from the edge, especially your weak side position, which is the Viper. If that group can get better, then this defensive line in 2024 could be special. As it is, it's a top 10 group as it is. That's really good. It's a top 10 defensive line as is. I think it's strong at defensive end. I think your starting lineup at defensive tackles is as good as anybody in college football, and the depth showed a lot of promise this spring. There's a lot of potential. There's a lot to be excited about this group for 2024. So when you look at the state of the union, so to speak, for the defensive line, you know, the current state of the defensive line is strong. For 2024, it's strong. It's very good. And it has a chance to be truly elite if those things that we talked about can be improved. And that's what we look at when you talk about the present. Then you dive into the future, and that's where the conversation changes a little bit. So the future of the defensive line, what is it? I don't know. This is where I come from. I hate not knowing. I like being able to say, hey, look, and here's what I mean by hate not knowing. We don't ever really know what's going to happen. But you can look at things. I can look at the depth chart. I can make a prognostic. Hey, I like the talent. I like this. I think that's good. I there's certain things I know. I know this is at least the floor of what this group can be. And when I look at the defensive line, I really get kind of concerned because there's so much that we don't know. And here's what I mean by that. What I don't know, the big question mark for me is this. Well, here's the thing I know about Al Washington. And this is where my uncertainty comes from, is Coach Washington. Because here's what I know. I know that Coach Washington could take a veteran group of players and get a lot out of them. He did it in 2016 at Boston College, where he inherited Harold Landry and Zach Allen. And there was one other kid that he had that year that was a veteran, and he got a lot out of them. They were very good. He coached the line, I think, for like 1 or 2 years. I saw him do that in 2022 to a degree with some veteran players. But then you come into 2023, he goes into year two, and he does a really good job with Riley Mills and Howard Cross and Javonte Jean-Baptiste, and you had a pretty good defensive line. And what he showed us, without any question, is that he can take a veteran group of players that were in large part developed by somebody else and coach them up into being a pretty good defensive line. And here's what I mean by that. I am taking nothing away from the job Al Washington did with Riley Mills, Howard Cross, Javonte Jean-Baptiste last year. Taking nothing away from him. He did what he needed to do. No question. But let's be honest about something. You have to give some of the credit for Javonte's success to Larry Johnson, who coached the kid for 5 years, who's considered one of the better D-line coaches in the business. The guy that coached Riley Mills for his first 2 years, who coached Howard Cross for his first 3 years, Jordan Patelho for his first 2 years, is Mike Elston, who is walking around California right now. I'm saying hyperbolically because he's probably not doing this, but the point is, he's walking around California right now with a national championship ring. What's the group of players that we're talking about being in contention with Notre Dame's players for the top D-line job? It's Michigan. So Mike Elston primarily recruited or developed the top two defensive tackle tandems in the country for next year. Michigan guys he recruited and developed, and then Notre Dame guys who he recruited and developed earlier in their careers. Well, that says something to me. I don't know that Al Washington can recruit that type of talent. And I don't know that Al Washington can take guys that are young and turn them into impact players. So that's why I'm confident that RJ Oben's going to be good, because Al Washington showed me that he can go out and recruit a veteran, transfer guy, bring him in, and develop him more. You can give Larry Johnson credit for what he did with Javonte Jean-Baptiste, but Javonte did things in Notre Dame he never did at Ohio State. You can't deny that either. If you can't, in some attempt to take credit away from Al Washington, you can't say, well, you know, Larry Johnson gets all the credit for that. No, because what he did at Notre Dame was beyond what he ever did at Ohio State. And that's a tribute to Al Washington. He deserves credit for that. He deserves credit for helping take Riley Mills to the next level and Howard Cross to the next level. But the foundation was laid by somebody else. By two guys that I think are considered two of the better D-line coaches in college football. Now, Mike Elston's in the NFL, but he was in college football. Larry Johnson, Mike Elston recruited and laid the foundation for Notre Dame's best defensive lineman last year. No question. Now we get into, well, okay, cool. Keep doing that in 2024. Do that with RJ Oben. Keep doing that with Riley Mills. Keep doing that with Howard Cross. The problem is for this defense to really take the next step in 24, and even more importantly, 25 and beyond, he's got to now show that he can develop young players, guys that either A, he recruited, or B, only he coached. And that's what he steps into. I have some concerns about this for a host of reasons. Number one is, One of the things that Mike Elson was always praised for, it's something that I praise Mike Mickens a lot for, is coaching the entire depth chart. Coaching the young guys, the guys that don't play a lot, the scout team guys just as hard and as well as he coaches the veterans. I don't know that that's necessarily happening right now. Depends on who you talk to. There's no doubt it needs to get better. You're going into a year where you're talking about guys like Donovan Heinisch, Josh Burnham, Junior Tuilamaka, Boubacar Traore, Bryce Young, guys that have only been coached by you, Devin Houston, Brennan Vernon, guys that have only been coached by you. I don't care who recruited them. They've only been coached by you. Can Al Washington get out of them what he has gotten out of the veterans? I don't know. We'll start to get our answer in 2024. If Josh Burnham doesn't take a step this year, if Junior doesn't take a step this year, if Jason Onye, Gabriel Rubio, guys that have been primarily coached by Al Washington, but even more so the younger players, Boubacar, Devin Houston, Brennan Vernon, if those guys don't take steps this year, then I have to really question, can you take young guys and develop? I know you can take veterans and develop them, but can you take young guys and develop them? Like Harry, and that was a question about Harry Hiestand when he first got to Notre Dame. Like, look, okay, you showed up and, you know, Zach Martin was going into his third year in college, right? Chris Martin was going to his third year. You know, Braxton Cave, Mike Golick, they were veteran players that had been in the program for several years. Ed Warner had laid that foundation. Can you build your own line? Well, yeah, he showed he could do that. He went out in 2015 with an offensive line that was recruited by him primarily, developed primarily by him. I think Nick Martin had spent 1 year with the previous coaching staff, but Ronnie Stanley only coached by him. Steve Elmer only coached by him. Mike McGlinchey only coached for him, but all but 1 year. I mean, Quentin Nelson only coached by him, all coached by him. 17 offensive line, recruited and coached by him. He showed he could do that. Mike Mickens has shown that he can take guys that only he coaches and only he recruits and develop them into studs. That's what the great coaches do. You've got to be able to do that. And so we have to learn that about Coach Washington. And the answer won't be, well, look what Riley Mills did. Look what Howard Cross did. He'll get credit for that. And no one should ever take away any credit for the job he's done with Javonte Jean-Baptiste, or if he does with RJ Oben or Howard Cross or Riley Mills. He gets more credit for developing Howard Cross than Mike Elston does because he's the one that was there that took him to that next level. But you also can't take away the fact that Mike Elston laid that foundation. Same with Riley Mills. Can Al Washington lay the foundation? We don't know that. We don't know that he can. We don't know that he can't. That's the thing. It's truly an unknown. This isn't a let's take a shot at Al Washington session. This is a being honest about what he's done. Because I've pointed this out before. You don't have a track record to go back to. You know, like if you look at, like, you could say this. Okay, well, you know, Dylan McCullough is kind of the same thing because Dylan McCullough didn't take over at Notre Dame until 2022. So Logan Diggs and Audric Estime were already there, et cetera, but I can look back at Dylan McCullough and say, okay, but I know the track record. I know what he did at Indiana with guys he recruited and developed. The track record is there. Without Washington, he doesn't have that track record. He was a D-line coach for 2 seasons at Boston College, 4 years apart. He was the assistant special teams and D-line coach in 2012. Then he coached running backs for 3 years. Then he spent 1 year coaching D-line in 2016. He was the D-line coach for 1 year at Cincinnati. Michigan, he was the linebackers coach for 1 year. And at Ohio State, he was a linebackers coach for 3 years. Did well early, but in 2021, when it was players that hadn't been developed by somebody else, he didn't do as good of a job, and he got run out. I think that's a little unfair. So, like, but the point is we look, because I think there was other issues going on that Al Washington became sort of the scapegoat for some of those things. But the fact of the matter is that the job wasn't very well done. So we don't know that he can do that. He can take that group of young players and say, I'm going to take you from start to finish and turn you into something special. We have no clue if he can do that. He may be great at it. I don't know. Because he's never had to do it. He's never been anywhere longer than 2 or 3 years. And so to me, I have a major question about that. Can he, because the ultimate success of this D-line in 24, but even more so in the future, is going to hinge on that. So can he take? So this year, Burnham needs to take a big jump. If Josh Burnham doesn't have a breakout year, then I question that. If Boubacar Traore can't make a jump, then I question that. If you can't figure out a way to coach up Brennan Vernon and Devin Houston, and I don't want to hear stuff about, you know, they're not consistent enough, they're not doing this, they're not doing that. I understand all that. Same thing as excuses we have with Tyson Ford. If Notre Dame goes through a period of time where you have Tyson Ford, Devin Houston, and Brennan Vernon, and you can't coach any of those guys up to be contributors, then I got to say, maybe they're not the problem. I'm not saying that's going to happen. They're all still young. I'm simply making, you can say, okay, well, yeah, but Tyson Ford's this and Devin. So you can't get any of those guys on track. None of those guys on track. You're going to need to. And you say Cole Mullins has already had a high motor. You're going to put him instead of, can you take the guys that aren't self-starters? Can you take the guys that need molded and developed? Howard Cross is a self-starter. Riley Mills is a self-starter. Javonte Jean-Baptiste is a self-starter, right? Donovan Heinisch is a self-starter. Can you take those younger players that maybe need molding and pushing as players, but also as young men, and develop them? That's a question. Why is it a question? Never seen him do it. We should start to see it this year. If we start to see those young guys emerge, and it doesn't have to be week one. If Boubacar Traore doesn't have 4 sacks by the end of game 3, or Josh Burnham doesn't have 4 sacks by the end of game 3, you don't sit there and say, ah, freaking now Washington can't get the job. No, that's not fair. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not even saying he won't do it. I'm not saying he can't do it. I'm generally saying we don't know because he's never done it before. He's never taken that foundation. But if by the middle of the season, we get to the end of season, some guys are breaking out, then I'll start feeling a little bit better about, okay, Jason Onye is an example. Now, Jason Onye was coached for, I believe, a year by Mike Elston, but it was a weird year, and it was only for 1 year, and he didn't play a whole lot on scout team. If Jason Onye has a breakout, you can look at Al Washington and say, okay, you didn't recruit him, and he was coached by somebody else for a year, but, dog, you had him for 3 years. Like, you get the credit for that. So Jason Onye is another one that I look at and say, if the breakout comes, then you have to give Al Washington some credit. Guy here, guy there, but there needs to be multiples of those guys. If that happens, then I'm going to feel really good about the future of the defensive line from a development standpoint. That gets us into our second question, and that's the recruiting aspect. What I don't know about Al Washington is, can he recruit consistently? We've seen some good things. We've seen some not so good things. We don't need to talk a whole lot about it, but there needs to be more consistency. There's people that look at Al Washington, who's probably the most polarizing coach on the staff when it comes to how the fans treat him. It's like he's either terrible or he does everything right, and there's like no in-between, and there's a lot of in-between. He's had some big wins. I mean, you can't deny that. He's had some big wins. If they end up, you know, I don't know that I'd give him all the credit in the world for Boubacar. I mean, he played a role. There's no doubt. Some of the guys that they brought in were guys that were recruited by other people. He deserves a big part of why Javonte Jean-Baptiste came. That's a recruiting win. I mean, it's a graduate guy, but it's a recruiting win. You know, you got Chris. Look at the current freshman class. I mean, Bryce Young. Yes, Bryce Young was going to lean towards Notre Dame, but you had to not blow it, and he didn't blow it. I like the Logan Thomas pickup. I'm a big Cole Mullins guy. I have some questions about Sean Civilano, but so far, Sean's done some nice things. 2025, I have some frustrating things that have happened in 2025. But you can't ignore the fact that he beat Ohio State and Michigan for Christopher Burgess. Can't ignore that. I like the Joseph Reef pickup. I like the Davion Dixon pickup. Those are good things. And far too often, when a mistake is made by a coach or a coach doesn't do something correct, we will ignore the wins and only focus on the losses. And that's not right. Just like it's not right to ignore the Justin Scott situation or other losses and only focus on the wins. There has to be a happy medium in this conversation. And there's a happy medium. There has to be honesty in this conversation. And here's the honesty of it, right? This is the reality. This is, to me, not debatable. Al Washington has shown that he can recruit good players to Notre Dame, including at times some big wins. What coach has not shown is that he's a good evaluator and that he is good at getting the tough wins consistently. He's gotten a couple. Chris Burgess was not an easy win. I would argue, however, that Chris Burgess is a little bit more prone to liking Notre Dame than maybe some other kids. So he's done a good job, but can he do a great job? That I don't know. And I don't care about recruiting rankings. I'm going to give him a lot of credit for getting Joseph Reiff. I like Joseph Reiff. That's a good evaluation. But then I got a question. What is up with your Marco Jones evaluation? I don't like your own Wayful evaluation. I didn't like your Justin Scott evaluation. There's a lot of different things you can look at and say, man, like, I don't know about this. So that's the other part that comes into my concerns about the future are he's got to recruit at a more consistent level. I can point to every position on the team and say, okay, receiving's got to get better, but here's their plan. Here's what they're trying to do. Corner's got to finish. Safety, linebacker, they got to finish. I know the plan. I don't know what the plan is on defensive line recruiting. I have no clue. No clue. And that's not a good thing, right? So to me, it's not, and somebody said his closing ability is sketchy. I actually don't think his closing is that bad. I think his evaluations are not good. And I think when he misses, it's because he doesn't go as hard after a guy that he should. That's what I think the bigger issue is. I think if he would have been all in on going after Marco Jones, I feel pretty good about Notre Dame's chances of landing Marco Jones. If you had just Marco Jones at his class, I'm like, dude, it's a pretty darn good defensive line class. You got a top 100 caliber guy in Chris Burgess. You got a definite top 100 guy in Marco Jones. I got Davion Dixon in my top 150. Joseph Reiff's a top 250 guy with a very high ceiling. I'm digging that D-line class. But it's always that one big mistake that you don't win that kind of takes some of the shine off, right? And that's where coaches got to get better. So he's close. But now it's you got to take that next step as a developer, and you got to take that next step as an evaluator, and you got to take that next step as a finisher. And so that's why I say for Al Washington, this next year is going to be huge for him. Get the most out of your veterans. We already know you can do that. I fully expect him to do that. Take some of those young guys and get them to that next step. If he can do that, then this D-line in 2024 is going to be nasty. What does that mean? That's going to make his recruiting job even easier in 2026, where they're on some very talented players, but it's pretty good players. Are they going to be able to get any elite guys? That I don't know. And so the on-field product could help you with that. I mean, if Howard Cross and Riley Mills are both day two draft picks last year, even if somebody, one of them goes in the first round, and then RJ Open gets picked next year, all of a sudden you're looking at Al Golden or Al Sharpe like, yo, this cat's putting some dudes in the NFL. That's going to make his recruiting job a lot easier. And so it all goes together. So everything I'm saying to you right now is not a he can't do it. He won't do it. It's I don't know. He's done a great job here, solid job here, but that's got to get better. So great job developing, building the veteran players. Got to get better. Recruiting's got to get better, but you're showing some progress, right? You've had some good wins. In the middle is can you develop young players? That nobody knows the answer to that. And anybody tells you they do, they're guessing. They're just guessing because he's never done it. So the hope is that we'll learn this year if he can. And if he does it, then this D-line is going to be really good, and that's going to make his recruiting job a lot easier. And that's when I'll say the future of the defensive line can be as good as the present. And that's the answer we have to find out from Al Washington. And that's where we're at when it comes to the Notre Dame defensive line. Present, it looks really good. There are some things that can happen in the present, and if they do, will make us feel a whole lot better about the future. There's a chance for the future to be really good. And here's what I mean by that. If Al Washington proves this year that he can develop young players, right? He can take young guys and maximize their ability just like he can the veterans. We're going into 2025 with what I think is going to be like Gabe Rubio, Jason Onye, Donovan Heinisch, Sean Sevillano, Armel Mookum, Devin Houston, Brennan Vernon, loaded interior depth chart. Loaded. You're going to, at Viper, you're going to have Boubacar Traore. You're going to have Logan Thomas. You have to find somebody else to play there, maybe a portal guy. And then maybe you move Josh Burnham back there. You're going to have Bryce Young. You're going to have potentially Aiden Gobira. You're going to have Chris Burgess. You're going to have a chance to have a very talented, long, athletic defensive line. And the God-given physical talent of the 25 line, in my opinion, will be even greater than that of the 24 defensive line, because some of the younger players will be closer to their peaks. Think about that. So talent-wise, should be really good. But we've got to get the question answered of, can Al Washington get the most out of it? That's the unknown. And that's what's going to ultimately tell us how good this D-line can be, is that right there. So that's going to do it for the D-line discussion. We're going to watch a little film here next. And it's not going to be a super long segment, but we're going to watch some film. We're going to talk about 2026 quarterbacks next. But before we do, folks, hit that like button, hit the subscribe button, hit the notification bell, share this podcast, give us a 5-star review. And if you don't mind, we would greatly appreciate your support by signing up for Irish Breakdown's Champions Lounge. That's Boards. You can find that at boards.irishbreakdown.com.